Tune in Wednesdays at 2 p.m. for the program, when I and host Nate go over a collection of post-punk, post-rock, experimental, electronic, hip-hop, noise, shoegaze, and all types of music, and with a new theme and guest every week. It is the worst show on the radio. I'll see you soon.
Hello and good evening, folks. You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM, CFRC.ca. It is now Sunday, 8 p.m. in our imaginary world, because we are pre-recording. You're listening to The Yellow Brick Road on CFRC. CFRC's British and Irish music show. I'm away this weekend again, as it so happens. So, I mean, I hope you're all not missing me, but I'm still going to be bringing you lots of shows. So we're sitting here on the Saturday evening pre-recording, because I'm going tomorrow to Montreal to see the, which I'm very excited about, and I'm probably going to cry when they start playing stuff from Soul Mining. But, you know, seeing as I am the British and Irish music show, there's really only one thing in music news that I can start this week's show with. You know, also just like talking about bands that people have cried to. Big news in music, and it's not one that I can necessarily tackle on my own. So Madison is joining me on the show today. Madison, who does a really good show, Between Friends with Sophia, Thursday mornings at 11 o'clock. That you should definitely be listening to if you haven't already heard it. It's a great way to start your day.
Thank you, Rue. I really appreciate it. And the tragic news that Rue is referencing is the death of Liam Payne. Quite sudden and very unexpected. And for those of you who don't know, aside from his subsequent solo career, Liam was part of One Direction. Mm-hmm. Which
One of the five.
And to say that I was obsessed with them as a tween would be an understatement. So, it was kind of crazy. Couldn't really believe the news. And obviously, I don't know him personally, but it kind of felt like a little bit of a death of my childhood along with it. It was like, whoa, oh my goodness. Like, I really was like, listened to them relentlessly for about 5 years. And, you know, then you grow up and you find other music. But, you know, it was a really big moment. I don't know.
Yeah, I think everyone is going to feel this one a little bit, because if you are sort of in your 20s or a little bit older or a little bit younger, then you are exactly the right age to have been around at a time when, whether you were into that kind of music or not, you would have been surrounded, like the music world around you was surrounded by One Direction's music, by their fans, by people talking about them. People would be in schools just being like, you know, this is my favorite member. Mm-hmm. This guy is my, like, what's the word for it? My one true crush or whatever it was.
Oh, yeah.
What was it?
I don't remember. I know what you mean, though.
But yeah, they'd be like, this is my preferred guy from the, like, you know,
it's
this
almost
is my
akin
favorite.
To K-pop.
K-pop,
it's
yes.
It's like the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was so interesting because, you know, love them or hate them, you kind of couldn't escape them.
Which is testament to their legacy.
Definitely. And I think for me, at least, it was kind of that I'm the perfect age. I'm 22 now, but where I still got their CDs for Christmas and things like that. And like CD player, like convincing my mom to like take out her Matchbox 20 CDs so I could put my One Direction Up All Night one in the car. And so, yeah, and like you really like, I don't think that sense of fandom, I mean, it does definitely in like the K-pop world, but it was all encompassing, and like you had your favorite, and my grandma would like buy me One Direction merch like for Christmas and things like that. And, you know, you recognize all their voices. Like I was telling Rube earlier, like I was like, oh, I know so-and-so is singing. Like, oh, this sounds like Harry. Oh, I know this is Louis, which is so bizarre. I don't think I could do that with a band of five people today. But yeah, it's quite shocking. And like looking back on their discography and their legacy and the pure statistics, it's insane. But at the same time, I was almost a little nervous to talk about it because it feels like a shameful secret that I was a big One Direction fan. And I'm like, well, it's kind of this feeling. I'm like, oh, is my taste in music going to be discredited because of this like shameful past? So it's kind of interesting. See, they were so popular, but also to admit you liked their music was a little bit.
To admit you liked their music was almost to like subscribe to or say that, you know, I am in the bubble of like 16-year-old fangirls, and that was for some reason a bad word.
Yeah, it was like, oh, they were screaming girls, and you know, even though I was literally 11 years old when they were at their height, but it was like,
and I'm sure there were people that took it to like extremes, and there were, you know, people that would go to their houses or try and find out really personal things. I think in some ways, and, you know, there was like, I believe, divide within fandom as well, where some, there would be people who'd be like, I'm not a crazy fangirl. I like this band, but like, you know, they were like, you know, anti the fangirls because the fangirls, you know, tar all of our reputation. And I think I also just want like want to drop a book recommendation because there's a book by a writer called Hannah Ewins called Fangirls. And a lot of it touches upon like how kind of musicians are perceived. And like it talks about like how, you know, the Beatles were initially like screaming fangirls. They were called a pop band. And then as they got more like psychedelic and, you know, like they got more serious, they became a rock band. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And definitely, I remember, like, boys my age would be like, One Direction is for girls, like, da-da-da-da. And I'd be like, oh, I am a girl. or, like, you know, or, but then also I felt bad for all the, everyone else out there who secretly liked their music and couldn't be open about it. So it's an interesting line to toe. And then I think now, only just recently, have I been able to be like, yeah, I loved One Direction. And even last week, actually.
You were wearing the shirt.
I was wearing the t-shirt that I wore to the concert when I was 11. And this is, I don't know, I haven't grown that much because it still fits. But I have never gotten so many compliments on my outfit at Queen's than I have on that day. Everyone's like, I like your shirt. But even then, it was kind of like a, like, an, like a secret.
I'm admitting it, but like, don't tell anyone kind of thing.
I know, especially now that, you know, doing radio and all this stuff, and it's like, oh, like I'm supposed to, you
have
know,
the cool, like, underground,
exactly,
non-popular, weird music taste.
Exactly. But now I'm like, you know what? I loved it. And then, like, I remember I went to their concert. I was 11, so I don't know what year that would have been. Over 10 years ago, though. And it was in Auckland, and I remember this was a really big deal because not many artists, especially artists of that size, or kind of only artists of that size who can afford it to tour out there. But they played two shows in Auckland. I went to one, and 5 Seconds of Summer, this little band that Louis had found on YouTube,
from Australia,
was opening for them. And everyone's like, who are these guys? Because they were 16 and 17-year-olds. I remember Luke Hemmings, the lead singer of that band, his mum was on the tour because he couldn't go by himself because he was underage. And everyone being like, oh, who are these guys? And that would end up being my like next little obsession. But then they had huge hits like She Looks So Perfect and Don't Stop and all that was really big.
They were kind of like the next big like boy band, but then they were like, they didn't want to be really a boy band. We make pop rock.
They're like, we play instruments.
Yeah.
Because One Direction famously, apart
did
from
not.
Mile, didn't. And I think as well, because especially for people in the UK, bringing it back to, you know, the premise of Rue's show, they had the entire journey because they had like the X Factor, and like I didn't watch the X Factor. They didn't go on New Zealand TV. But they had a kind of unconventional formation, but one that was
that
weirdly...
they were formed as opposed to they formed.
Exactly. And I remember being a bit saddened growing up to realize that, oh, they're not all like the best of friends the way that Simon Cowell would like them to be marketed as. Like in all the promotional material, like, oh my gosh, they're all best friends, they all hang out all the time and like brothers. And it's like, actually they started out as strangers, but also they have that connection because like they were whirled into this crazy world. Like I can't imagine, you know, leaving home for an audition at age 16 and like I was saying to you earlier, like never coming home basically. But yeah, it's a tragic day this week with Liam's passing, but also it's been like a moment of reflection looking back on that music and being like, okay, I'm not going to be mad at my younger self for enjoying that. And there's a little bit of a, like, your childhood is like, you know, there was rumors of a reunion coming soon and I was like, I'm definitely gonna go, and now it's like, you know,
probably not going to happen anymore. But there are a few different sides of looking back on it almost. And like one side that a lot of people have been talking about is kind of, you know, why, as people have been asking why for a long time, why kind of like kids so young get pushed onto such a big stage. And like, I know that, you know, people who have themselves been child stars, like Rebecca Ferguson, who I think was also on that season, that particular series of X Factor. She was definitely a part of like some series where they were also on it. And, like, she's been quite a prominent advocate for, like, speaking out against, you know, this almost child exploitation. You're throwing these people up on the world's biggest stages and you've given them no coping mechanisms. And, like, you know, people talk about that for bands like Oasis as well, even though, you know, they were self-made and everything. When the band started, like, Liam Gallagher was 19 years old. And, like, so that's clearly a person that understands, you know, where all of this is coming from. He also said something where he was like, you know, it's just really sad. And, like, what it comes down to is people don't have a way of coping with it. Mm. And, like, it does feel like right until the end, you know, people were still kind of just, like, prodding them for headlines.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know? Especially with Liam recently, like,
mm-hmm. He was the guy in the headlines.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it's just, like, such a shame because, like, their touring schedule or their music schedule, okay, they finished the X Factor, album, tour, album, tour, mm-hmm. album, tour. They literally didn't have any time off for 5 years, basically.
And those are, like, crucial five teenage years.
From, like, 17 to 21, 22.
Yeah, so they didn't have, like, a normal youth at all. You have no way of coping. And, like, you know, you've kind of, most people end up finding very sometimes destructive, unconventional ways of, like, trying to figure stuff out. And then they don't really have the space to make mistakes either.
Because you also, it's
like, we could do something silly and then we'd look back and the worst thing you'd say is, oh, I was really annoying back then. But, like, obviously everything they do is going to get printed as the headline news in five nationals.
Definitely. And all over the world, too. I remember when I was younger, this video came out of, like, Harry or, like, Louis and Zayn or something smoking.
Mm.
Like, smoking weed in, like, in a car. And I remember, like, oh, my gosh, they would never do that. Like, I was, like, scandalized. I was, like, they would never do that. Like, I know them. Like, they wouldn't do that. What the hell? Like, that is so weird. But I remember that was huge headline news.
Mm-hmm. And it's just kids being kids. That's teens being teens.
Exactly. And I was like, oh, my goodness. Especially as I got older and, like, being 16, I'm like, imagine if I had to be on tour right now.
All the time.
Like, that's crazy. And also, like, every relationship they were ever in was under scrutiny.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, like, I can't even imagine it. But then you have to look to the management and be like, how could you do this to, like, you know, you're telling them that they're living their dreams.
And so you're telling them that this is the price of living, especially that creating that kind of, like, use it or lose it thing where you're like, this is the price of your dreams. Because I'm sure, like, people realize when they're being put under stress, pressure, unusual situations, or people around them notice as well. And then it's like the minute you say something, you're just told that, you know, you're replaceable.
Mm-hmm.
You could be gone. You have to do what it takes to, like, stay in the headlines.
Definitely. And especially, like, tackling the solo career after that. Mm-hmm. Anything you do is going to be a step down from that level of fame.
Yeah.
And I think Liam was the first one after Zayn, so the second, I suppose, to release solo music. And that song got ridiculed. You know, it's not my favorite, but, you know, people really went in on
and
him.
And you can see he was just trying to, like, what he was doing there with that, like, dance funky album, but song, was trying to, like, rid himself of the past image, which is really hard to, it's hard to have to carry around your 16-year-old self in everything mm-hmm. you do.
Definitely. And, you know, it's not expected of anyone else apart from them. But what a lot of people don't know is that Liam carried a lot of the songwriting mm-hmm. credits in One Direction. And a lot of it's pretty different to, like, the sound that he ended up making as a solo artist. And he ties down a lot of the vocals. I think vocally, aside from Harry, he's the most consistently strong. Like, Zayn had some awesome high notes and stuff like that. He had a great range. But Liam consistently, if you, like, listen to the music, he is, especially the live performances, he is carrying a lot of the load, especially mm-hmm. in the early days. Because he actually auditioned for The X Factor 2 years prior to One Direction's formation. He was 14. That's crazy. And he got all pretty far in the rounds, like, to the judges' houses and everything. And Simon Cowell, main judge of The X Factor, for those who haven't seen it, was like, okay, you're great, but you're not ready. Like, come back in 2 years. And so he did. And then the band was kind of formed around him. And there was a big pressure to, not pressure, but you could tell in all the performances on The X Factor, they were trying to make him, like, quote-unquote, the main one. He started the song, was in the middle, but then, of course, the public
wanted
Harry.
The baby faces.
Yeah, so it's interesting. But he, you know, had a really strong voice, even though it's not necessarily the most distinctive in the songs.
It kind of holds down the songs. You were saying that, like, it's wild that there are statistics on this, but, like, you were saying we were looking up that he started, like, half of the songs at least.
Yeah, so it's, like, whoever sings that first, you know, what becomes, like, the most very recognizable part of the song. But the one that I've chosen for today is Fireproof, which I don't think is one that, unless you were a fan, you probably didn't know it.
Mm-hmm. A deep cut.
A deep cut, if you will.
From the fourth album.
Aptly titled Four. And to be clear, there were still five members of the band at this time, pre-Zayn's departure. But yeah, this song, I think it's really great. And I don't know if it's one that people would say, oh, that's clearly One Direction. Because I think the stuff of theirs, it's easy. The low-hanging fruit, I would say, for critics, is their early stuff. Mm-hmm. Like super poppy, like super, you know.
Very off that 2010s radio sound.
Definitely. But Fireproof, I actually think it's a really great song. And, you know, I'm trying to put aside this, like, shame I have around liking One Direction. I think I still have to get over it. But this is one of the songs I'm like, I feel like I could show this to, like, perhaps a One Direction hater.
The cool indie crowd.
The cool indie crowd. To all of you listening, that's just, mm-hmm. you must be cool and indie. But this one, I'm like, hopefully this would make them take a chance on One Direction. You know, think about it from a 2024 perspective and maybe not a 2014 one.
Mm-hmm. And also, I think we were talking about this before, that a lot of people, I think, while it's sad that this is the thing that, like, is enabling it, almost I think this is going to allow people to maybe look back at their relationship with, like, One Direction and pop music and, I guess, girls' music, as you called it at one point, and a lot of people did, a little bit more honestly, and it might, like, allow them to enjoy it a bit more in ways that they'd been, you know, like you were saying, people, like, kind of secretly liked it and were maybe a little scared to do before.
Mm-hmm, definitely. I think the song is a good place to start and give One Direction another try, mm-hmm. even if it is through such sad circumstances.
Mm-hmm. I think the thing to carry forward is to, like, keep an eye on, like, your current bands and just, like, you know, think about things like hectic tour schedules, lots of media, press, and just, like, let people live a little. Mm-hmm. Give them a little space to just be human beings and not just, like, dance monkeys in a cage,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. And even, like, the sheer amount of, if nothing else, even if you're still a 1D hater at heart, the amount of just pure quantity and effort in that such a short time frame, especially from Liam Payne. And so, you know, that's, you know, I've seen videos of them recording in hotel rooms while they're on tour and writing it everywhere. And so it's,
they put,
like,
in the work.
They, like, did. So
they, you know, they definitely came from nowhere. They put in the work, and whether subjectively the music is for you or not, I think to deny them their legacy would probably not be a good idea.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So let's listen to the song right now, Fireproof, One Direction, opening the show here on Yellow Brick Road.
I think I'm gonna lose my mind. Something deep inside me, I can't give up. I think I'm gonna lose my mind. Till I'm out of luck. Yeah, I roll and I roll till I'm out of luck. I'm feeling something deep inside, hotter than a jet stream burning up. I got a feeling deep inside. It's taking all I've got. Yeah, it's taking all I've got. 'Cause nobody knows you, baby. Change my luck.
bit of Fireproof One Direction. We're playing a bit of One Direction on here, just kind of to mark Liam Payne's passing and like kind of pay our tributes.
Mm-hmm. And Rue was just saying that his vote, because Liam sang lead vocals on the most of that song, but specifically in the chorus. And Rue was saying something really interesting. You had an interesting connection between the way that those sounded.
Yeah, he could, I mean, with those kind of like those, you know, those like melodic harmonies and everything, he could have guested on a Jungle album and he would have sounded perfect, like the band Jungle.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what have you got coming up next, Drew?
Well, I'm going to play us a little bit of Nubian Twist, who have just put out a deluxe version of their Find Your Flame album. They're one of my favorite, just like in that neo-jazz kind of side of things where like people are blending together all these different influences and giving jazz like another shot in the arm, really. And yeah, this is a this is almost like a powerhouse collaboration. Nubian Twist, like, you know, a jazz collective of all these different artists making music in London. And then, or I think they're in London. They might be somewhere else, but they're down in England for sure. Quarto Alto, Mercury nominated this year for his album. They're a Scottish kind of jazz band as well, who recorded their Mercury nominated album in bedrooms, which is crazy to me because that's not how you expect jazz to be made, right?
Definitely. Yeah, no, I think I'm finding jazz so energizing at the moment, especially with the Ezra Collective's new album, and that's been great. So good.
Because I love how they've pitched it, not as, you know, the way we would do jazz in Toronto, which is like go to Massey Hall, sit in a seat, fold your arms, pin drop silence, here comes the band, orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
But they're saying, you know, their album is called Dance, Nobody's Watching.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're like, no, it's about community. You get down on the floor, we're going to dance to this jazz music. And it's like a lot more friendly, happy, fun, sweaty. It's like jazz as a community as opposed to pristine jazz in the concert halls, which I really like. But yeah, Nubian Twist, Find Your Flame. They've put out the deluxe edition. And we might listen to some Subways because Subways are a very cool band. I've got a new song from theirs called We Live and Die in These Towns. Always a really cool band. It's a cover of the band The Enemy. Not Enemy as in like the thing. It was like, it's a double kind of we cover you, you cover us kind of thing. So The Enemy covered Rock and Roll Queen, a very well-known Subways song. And in return, the Subways have covered their song We'll Live and Die in These Towns. So we'll listen to the both of those. And it'll be a bit of a flip-flop going from jazz to this, but let's start off with a little bit of Nubian Twist.
Bad mind won't take control of me, but I got the formula for this. Teacher them did warn me for this. Keep it calm and cool your spirit. Then we try to take you for a fool. You have to work harder for win. Put down the target, we never miss. No long talking, we in a diss. Keep it burning, vibes and lit. Can't act like you said, you know how it is. Put down the target, we never miss. No long talking, we in a diss. Keep it burning, vibes and lit. Can't act like you said, you know how it is. Thank you.
comply.
This is a pre-record. You're listening to Yellow Brick Road on CFRC. I'm joined by a guest today. Adam's joining me, and we met at the Fontaines gig. Just to like introduce you to people.
Hi, my name is Adam. I'm talking to you from Richmond Hill, Ontario today, just north of Toronto. Mm-hmm. And I was able to meet Rue at the Fontaines gig, and we got talking and about various different bands and the program, which really excited me.
Mm-hmm. And like, we had plenty of time to talk at the Fontaines gig because we were both there really early.
Yeah, we queued up a couple hours before the gig started. There was only a small queue of people there that steadily grew as the evening went on, and it was pretty chilly. so, you know, we were pretty bundled up, and it's, you know, it's a good thing that there's not going to be too many gigs throughout the winter, because it would be a nightmare queuing up and the weather that we're about to get.
I know. I'm so glad that all the shows that are happening are going to be done by the end of October mostly. There's a couple coming up in November that we'll maybe talk about, because you have picked some songs for us to like play and like listen to, some of your favorite new picks. But I just want to ask you, how did you find the Fontaines show? You've seen them before,
really,
right?
Yeah, I previously have seen them in 2022 at the Phoenix Concert Theater in Toronto, mm-hmm. which was a great gig. And then I saw them again open up for the Arctic Monkeys last year, which was brilliant as well, and kind of great to see them reaching an even wider audience than before, opening up for such a big band like the Monkeys. And it was great as well, but it kind of took away a bit of the shine of seeing them when they're opening up for such a massive band. It was, you know, a lot of the fans of the Arctic Monkeys weren't really paying attention to them, which obviously they should have. But I think enough people did, because the fan base has only grown with the last album, which is probably, I would say, their best album to date.
Their most different one, for sure.
Definitely their most eclectic and interesting in terms of songwriting and production. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the gig was really brilliant. It was a lot of energy from the band, a great set list, a mix of the new songs and some of the old ones as well.
They brought back some old, like really old favorites.
Yeah, they played Big.
They played Big. Can you imagine, like if you've never heard of this band, you pick up the first album for the first time in 2019 and that's the first thing you hear. Just like, my childhood was small, but I'm going to be big.
Yeah, it's an incredible kind of opening salvo for like a young band like that. And it was really cool to see it kind of recontextualized in the point where, you know, they've kind of made that a reality. So that
yeah.
One of my highlights of the show for sure was hearing that song. And we were talking, and you saw them in Montreal as well.
I saw them at the Corona Theater on that 2022 tour. And they were, again, they were so good. They just came out. They had just Mustard on that tour opening for them. And they just, they were, you know, easily, and they were my first show after lockdown as well. So that was the first thing that I'd seen since like Feb 2020. And they just blew me away. Like, I was like, yeah, that was what we were missing. Like, live music, mm-hmm. people moshing. And, like, Green is so restless on stage. I think this is still a thing. Where he just, like, he'll walk around in circles, like, snap his hands. Like, back in during those shows, they played songs like Hurricane Laughter and all. And it's just, like, the restlessness that he brings to that song is really just, like, fitting for songs like that. And you just feel like, yeah, okay, this is what we were missing from music. It's great to hear it on the record. Like, they're a great band on record. But then to go out and see them live is just something else. And I feel like between that tour and this one, they've got better. So they've become a better live act. Like, you get more energy from them. And, you know, maybe it's like sometimes that does depend on the crowd. Like, how much the crowd gives you and how much you're able to give them back. Because I do think bands like this bounce off the crowd a little bit, especially when you're like five people. Like, it's not, you can't just like run around the stage all the time. But like, they give a lot in their live performances. That's what I feel.
For sure, for sure. I think restlessness is a great way to describe it. He kind of just feels hungry for that energy that he's giving and, you know, wants to get back from the crowd. And, you know, being in Toronto, it's something that I don't think bands quite always get from our crowds. We're a bit more subdued and kind of
a bit more reserved, I feel.
A bit more reserved. I think everyone was still enjoying themselves. There was a couple of fist fights behind us, which was shocking. But for the most part, I think people still had a great time. Yeah, and the energy was there, the talent was there, and it's, they're one of those bands that you can't miss when they go on tour live.
Yeah, for sure. But we've, like, I think we have a pretty decent overlap in our music taste, because I think you were also at the Yard Act show in Toronto, right, last week?
Yes. So yeah, like, it's another brilliant show at the Concert Hall in Toronto.
Yeah.
Smaller venue, but...
Nice venue.
But really nice venue, kind of. It's an old kind of theater type venue that was recently renovated a couple years ago.
Okay.
And it was really good to see Yard Act. They had kind of their dancers and backup singers, and really made for a great show, and such a brilliant album that they released as well. So a lot of great bands coming through the city recently.
Mm-hmm. I think they really moved away from the post-punk label when, like, this is what they wanted to do. They said, we'll outgrow that label. And they really did, because they moved on, like, got these sing-alongs, got kind of funky basses going, got the singer and backup dancers as well. But other bands are also going to be coming. And one of your picks is a band that's coming around next month. And they're actually on tour at the moment. And they've been on this show before, Courting.
Yes, yes, that's right. One of my favorite releases from earlier this year, Courting, their album New Last Name.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they'll be in town supporting Wunderbar another great band. And yeah, I'm really excited to see what we see from that. It's definitely going to be a smaller show than maybe they're used to in the UK right now.
They did Reading and Leeds this year. Even though it was like an early afternoon slot that wasn't, I think, on TV, they were still on one of the main stages and they still had like a pretty decent crowd and lots of energy and stuff, I've heard.
Yeah, yeah, it would have been great to see that film, but you know, I'm sure it was a great set from them. And yeah, it will be really interesting. It's a common theme, I think, with the UK bands coming over here, kind of having to adjust to the crowds, and you know, the popularity is, you know, not as heightened because we're not as familiar. Mm-hmm. The crowds are often, you know, not hearing them on the radio or seeing them on TV on the BBC with Glastonbury or Reading and Leeds.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always kind of a recurring theme you see with many different bands, and some are more successful than others. And yeah, it will be really interesting to see. And we're definitely hoping they come back for a full headline tour at some point. But
yeah, that would be so good. And like, they're also a little like when they started, they sounded a lot, and they've admitted to this. Like, they said that, yeah, we were kind of drawing inspiration from people like Parquet Courts and stuff. But they really, like, when they started writing sort of like the Grand National EP and things after that specifically, they really started to get more into like their pop influences, and they leaned into like writing bigger choruses and also just like specifically taking from hyperpop and like really taking that Charlie XCX influence and stuff. It's been great to see. Like, they've had a lot of back and forth with their fans, or like fans on Twitter just being like, oh, I don't really like the autotune stuff that you guys are doing. And they've said it's not like pitch correction. It's actually just using that as a vocal effect and they sound different. Like, I don't think there are many bands in that scene or anywhere that sound like Courting, that mix of like guitar indie stuff and this whole hyperpop influence. Like, there are not many bands doing that, so they do stand out. And like you said, it was a great album.
Yeah, definitely. I think those influencers are something that are really kind of vital to see the genre kind of moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think we often see guitar music, indie music, rock music, you know, whatever you want to call it,
mm-hmm.
as a genre that's been stuck in the past for many years, while, you know, other genres are continuing to evolve. So it's always great when a young band does something like this. Obviously, someone like Charlie is blowing up this year even more than ever with you know, an amazing album with the remixes just came out. Which
we'll talk about the remixes, I think, also when we come back.
Well, there's a lot to discuss there with the different choices. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah, but just it's a great time for kind of dance pop, hyper pop, and all those things, and kind of combining them with guitar music is definitely a really interesting path to take. And I'm excited to see what they do next as well.
Mm-hmm. Especially when they called their first album Guitar Music. Which song have you picked for our listeners to listen to?
Yeah, I have picked the track Battle.
Mm-hmm. It was a standalone that they released a bit after the album. I think it was an outtake is what they were saying. So that was going to be on New Last Name, but didn't quite end up making it.
Mm-hmm. Really enjoyed that track. And mm-hmm. The energy of it, and yeah, hoping I can see it when I catch them live.
Yes, and for like the album and stuff, I'm just going to direct people to their Bandcamp page, courtingband.bandcamp.com. You've also picked another big new release. There's new Primal Scream stuff. The album is on its way.
Yep. It's a first new album in quite a few years, so it's really exciting. They always seem to do something different, and I'm liking this new single a lot.
Very psychedelic.
Yeah. you never know with Bobby Gillespie what he's going to kind of take influence from, the more the rock side, the psychedelic. But I think these kind of tracks have definitely worked really well for them in the past, and I'm excited to see what the whole album looks like.
Mm-hmm. We've got the single Ready to Go Home. That's the one that you've picked. And again, the whole album, Come Ahead, coming out on the 8th of November, all of that is at primalscream.net. And one last song that we're going to listen to on this set. What's your last pick?
My last pick for this set is by the Sprints, Feast.
So good. It's just a new single that they've put out, sprintsmusic.bandcamp.com. But you and I think both have just really enjoyed the Letters to Self album.
Yeah, it's really an incredible album. I think one of the most passionate and kind of, but most literary and most full of energy. Mm.
That was specifically really... one of the songs that I liked off of it, Most Literary Mind.
Yeah, same for me as well. It's one of the ones that kind of really captured my attention. Shadow of a Doubt, Heavy, or a couple of other tracks off that Letter to Self album that I really enjoyed a lot.
Mm. It's grungy, it's like heavy, it's kind of in a Fontaine's, in a Skinty Fia Fontaine's way. It's got that kind of like that indie sound as well. So it's a great album, yeah.
Yeah, and this is another great single from them. Again, really interesting lyrics and really has that kind of primal energy.
Yes.
And yeah, another band that we would love to see come to Canada.
Yeah, they skipped Canada on this little headline tour that they did. They've only done US cities, but, you know, Canada would really like to have them. So let's start off with a bit of Primal Scream, though. Will people hear a bit of Ready to Go?
She's a bad stroke of luck, yeah, they hit her with the book. She's got a face for every place, you'll never know how she looks. And if heaven was a hero, then she'd go on and sing it. Drink the poison from the wine without a breath, go on and sink it.
Welcome back. You just heard a bit of Sprints with their song Feast. That was another Adam pick because Adam is joining us today. Adam and I met at the Fontaines DC show and like we clearly share a lot of our music taste. And so those were three picks that you had picked out for us. Some new Sprints stuff, Courting, and brand new Primal Scream song. What else have we got? We wanted to talk about the Charlie XCX album, the remixes album. It's finally here. And like, what a track list. I feel like it's about the names on the album. I haven't heard all the songs off of it, but I feel like that's almost not the point.
Yeah, the kind of just hype that this album has generated and continues to generate just seems to be never ending. The kind of year of Brat. So we have all these different names on the remix album, mm-hmm. from Ariana Grande to the 1975. To Caroline Polachek, to Julian Casablancas.
Yeah, exactly. That's really showing all the directions that this has gone in. And like, it's just the release time of this has been so crazy because everyone started saying the kind of, you know, Brat summer is over, it's time for whatever fall. And then that's when Charlie comes and says, I don't think so. I'm going to drop another remixes album and this is going to be a Charlie fall as well. And I think it topped the charts in the UK this week. So, like, there was this whole kind of sort of behind-the-scenes drama about, like, you know, why she ended up at number two when she dropped Brat, because everyone was pretty sure that it was going to be, like, a number one Charlie album, in the UK at least. But then, like, Taylor Swift dropped something, some, like, re-release another one of the many variants and CDs and stuff. I think it was also specifically like a UK only release because she was touring there at the time. And then obviously when someone as big as Taylor Swift drops something, it's going to go to number one, especially if it's like a limited run. So then Brat ended up at number two. But, you know, I feel like Charlie's now had her unchallenged moment because the remixes album, which is called Brat and it's completely different but also still Brat, has gone to number one.
Yeah, it's a really big thing for, you know, an artist who has been around for years and years and made hit songs and claimed albums, but
been Mercury nominated as well this year.
Mercury nominated as well, right? And yeah, just to kind of, it's nice to kind of see her finally getting her big moment in this way. Obviously, I think it's a recurring theme with Taylor Swift to release those limited edition albums when it looks like another artist will reach number one at times.
Yeah, which... we saw that with Fontaine's DC as well. That's the reason why A Hero's Death was number two in the UK. But yeah, this album doesn't, like, the remixes album is just like Charlie kind of showing off a very impressive contact list.
Yeah, definitely. I think the original songs are still kind of intact there, and showing off their kind of the songwriting quality on display. And this is really just kind of saying, here's a bonus. Look at all of my cool friends.
This is all the people I can have on speed dial, which is crazy good for her.
Yeah, and what an assortment different people that is.
Yeah, the 1975 to Troye Sivan, with whom she did tour here as well. Like, she played in Laval and in Toronto. A.G. Cook, Caroline Polachek, Billie Eilish, Lord, the famous Girl So Confusing remix, which I think the story of that song and, like, how Lord jumped onto it was probably one of the big stories of Brat, of, like, you know, Lord, like, figured out she was vaguing about her and, like, called her about it, and then they decided to... I think that's pretty much where the phrase "work it out" on the remix came from as well. So it's definitely, like, yeah, the Charlie dominance on our lives continues. And I think both of us have picked the Julian Casablancas song, right, to listen to?
That's right.
So funny definitely... that it's Mean Girls that's the song that he's on.
He's definitely someone, obviously, in kind of the indie world that, you know, we've both been following for a long time, and he can be unpredictable, as seen with his music.
He's the one in The Strokes. He's the one in The Strokes that brings in, like, the weird music taste.
He's definitely the weird girl of The Strokes, which it kind of fits that he would do something like this.
Yeah, it's fitting for him to be on Brat.
He is very Brat as a person.
The original Brat. And I've also picked some Lambrini Girls for us to play. Now, this is a band that I've seen live. I saw them back in July. And to, like, explain you how their shows are, I think if you look at, like, pictures from their set at, like, Glastonbury or Reading and Leeds, one of the two that they played, you'll see a picture of just, like, their singer Phoebe having climbed, like, they were playing one of the tented stages, and she basically climbed the pole halfway up the tent and was just kind of, like, I think she was, like, planting a flag there or something like that. But how did she get up there? I don't actually know. When she played in Toronto, when they played in Toronto, it was, like, at the Garrison, which is, like, this cool kind of, like, small artist-run co-op space / venue. Like, basically, it's an artist-run venue. And, like, they came down there. It was a small stage. Just, like, it was one of those places that you knew was going to get cramped, hot, sticky, you know, a punk venue. And... within, like, the first three songs, she was in the crowd. She just, like, jumped down. But the way she did it was she was there in, like, 3 inches.